Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering Kingston City Council's response to the proposed amalgamation of conservation authorities.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Council is formally pushing back against the province's plans to amalgamate conservation authorities across Ontario. At a recent meeting, Council passed a motion affirming strong support for the continued independence of the Cataraqui Conservation Authority, an organization that plays a key role in protecting local watersheds, wetlands, shorelines, and biodiversity across the region. The motion was moved by Councillor Gary Osteroff, who highlighted the CCA's long track record of local expertise, fiscal responsibility, and accountability to the communities it serves.
You know, we're sounding the alarm that this is quite a change for us. And so when you're on the board and you see what's happening, it causes alarm. And to have been chair and been involved as deeply as I have for my entire time on council, it's been nothing but inspiring for me to be part of this organization that is incredibly financially good steward of what we've been given. And when you think about what we do in the flood forecasting and the stormwater and everything that is handled it doesn't get done at a better price. So I just think that we have to be really careful to make these changes, and we just want to bring it to light, and hopefully we are able to make some suggestions and inputs that our government would be listening to.
Beyond environmental protection, the CCA provides essential services including flood forecasting and warnings, drinking water source protection, environmental education, and the management of conservation areas valued by residents. Councillor Don Amos, who seconded the motion, also raised concerns about the province's direction.
Environmental protection is not a one-size-fits-all, and this feels like a Toronto, once again, issue that is being now doled out to the whole province. And the main crux from my observation is that two CAs, or conservation authorities, two CAs sit in certain municipalities, or one municipality, and there seems to be communication and confusion when they have three people sitting together trying to figure out land use planning. And when you get in the minister's ear or the premier's ear about issues, sometimes a full sweep seems to happen. And this, in my observation, this has come into play again. Making five CAs come together to make one massive one on the Eastern region, or the St. Lawrence, if they're calling it that, the St. Lawrence region, is not going to bode well. Right now, this council can call up anyone in the conservation authority, have a direct conversation with a staff member. That staff member would know precisely where the counselor is talking about of concern and can help address that matter. This goes to a regional aspect. The St. Lawrence Conservation Authority, of what they're proposing, could be housed in Ottawa, could be housed in Cornwall, wherever. And now we're reaching out. The board has hinted that it could be 70 members strong. Good heavens, good luck in making a decision on that. There is no way that service levels and community values can happen and go through this When you create a size of a conservation authority of this magnitude, there will be no, from my observations, fiscal responsibility. When you have a forced amalgamation and back office integration, sometimes it works, most times it doesn't, because it's forced. It's not two collaborations coming together. It's an overbody that is saying you will do this. And most times that doesn't end well for anybody, and except the taxpayer ends up paying more. Right now, the City of Kingston is roughly 50% of the Conservation Authority's budget. We are the largest municipality in that realm. Hence, we have four councillors that sit on that board of directors. But I can say wholeheartedly, GM Ellingwood and his team are fiscally responsible. They are doing what they need to do to support the region in anything from land use patterns to environmental risks. And that's because of the relationships that we have built through this council. And I don't see that happening going to a larger entity.
During discussion, several councillors emphasized that amalgamation risks weakening local decision-making. Councillor Brandon Tozo spoke to this alongside other concerning trends in decisions made by the province.
Who's asking for this? Like, who's asking to take away local authority over conservation, make several larger authorities? Like, where's the advocacy that has been done at a local level for this? I'm reading through the information report earlier was infuriating. Like, each CA has different policies. They have different processes. They have different staffing. Of course they do, because they're dealing with different environmental considerations. And I think we've seen time and time again, this government reduce the power of conservation authorities. And I think this is just another way to further reduce local control and local decision-making over conservation, something that is, we are stewards of the environment for the next generation. This is just absolutely infuriating. I hate the fact that this government, on the big things that we're advocating for, ignores us, and on the little things where we have some degree of say, takes it away. It's just, yeah, this is a lump of coal in Doug Ford's stocking, if I could do it.
Councillors Vincent Shinani and Gregory Ridge also added that opposition isn't just coming from council chambers.
I've actually spoken to a bunch of constituents who actually approached me to talk to me about this and how concerned they were. So, you know, voters are concerned about this, greatly. It's not just a few people that approach me. So I think it's really important that we keep this local and smaller so that we can make better decisions.
I've had a number of constituents reach out to me to advocate for something like this before the agenda was presented. And so I'm very glad to see that it's here. I do also remind those constituents that this is ultimately a decision that will be made by the province, encourage them to reach out to the member of provincial parliament, in this case, Mr. Hsu. But at our own level, in terms of an advocacy piece, I think this is important to make our position very clear.
The motion also directs the city to formally share its position with the premier, relevant provincial ministers, local MPPs, the Cataraqui Conservation Authority, and municipalities across the watershed, encouraging others to voice similar support. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Jesse. Members of the Gananoque Fire Service were honored last Wednesday evening with Lifesaver Awards in recognition of their actions during two separate medical emergencies that resulted in lives being saved. The awards were presented to Community Safety Officer Dylan Champagne, Platoon Chief Paul Lloyd, Deputy Fire Chief Andrew Kent, Captains Sean Kraft and Kevin Conway, and firefighters Alan Smith, Mackenzie Van Slake, Alex Hutchinson, Tyler Lahivardi, Peter Stalker, and Travis McNeil. A Lifesaver Award is presented when emergency responders treat a patient who has gone into cardiac arrest, and through immediate medical care, the patient recovers well enough to be discharged from hospital. According to the fire service, the two incidents highlighted the importance of rapid response, effective teamwork, and continued medical training. Officials said the actions taken by the members directly changed the outcome of life-threatening emergencies. The Gananoque Fire Service also acknowledged the role of emergency dispatchers, noting their professionalism, coordination, and support play a critical role in successful outcomes during emergency responses. Fire officials said the recognition reflects the dedication and skill of the service's members and underscores the service's commitment to protecting the community and saving lives. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LJI reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about an influx of new funding for Resolve Counseling.
Thank you, Dinah. Resolve Counseling Services is one of 20 community-based organizations that are receiving funding from the Department of National Defense's Sexual Misconduct and Resource Center, or SMSRC, to offer free services to members of the defense community who have been impacted by sexual misconduct. Just over 3 years ago, a report put together by Supreme Court Justice Luis Arbour dug into a military culture that Arbour said was rampant with sexual misconduct and a, quote, broken system that the Canadian Armed Forces are incapable of addressing on their own. This round of funding from the DND is a step meant to help address some of these issues that were highlighted in the lengthy report, providing the opportunity for organizations all over Canada to provide free services to current and former CAF members. Resolve Counseling in Kingston will be funded for a 3-year period that began in October of 2025 and provides priority counseling services to defense community members who have experienced sexual misconduct, as well as their supporters, free of charge and without a wait list. Executive Director of Resolve Counseling Services, Stafford Murphy, says programs being funded like the one at Resolve are focused on trying to, quote, mitigate some of the harm caused to former and active service members who have experienced sexual misconduct in some form. The organization is receiving $75,000 in each of the next 3 years to provide services to veterans and current members of DND, and Murphy says it will allow Resolve to ensure members of the CAF have access to these services right when they're looking for them, removing as many barriers as possible. Through the grant, Resolve will have a target of approximately 420 sessions delivered per year and are in the process of trying to get the word out about these available services. Murphy says that trying to market those services has been the only real change needed to accommodate the program. Murphy says Resolve was already well suited to provide the services and have done so for other community members in the Kingston area for over 50 years now, saying that the organization would be a good place to take advantage of the grant funding as infrastructure was already in place. Because of that, defense community members who are interested in services can be connected immediately. Although services like this one being offered by Resolve are acknowledged as a need by the CAF after Justice Arbour's 2022 report, Murphy hopes their uptake and the role they can play for defense community members can also help encourage further progress more broadly for mental health care in Canada. Well, he says positive strides have been made both federally and provincially to address gaps in the mental health care system, remarking specifically on investments made in the intimate partner violence sector, there's still a long way to go. With many people in Ontario and other provinces around the country fearing a two-tiered health care system coming to Canada, Murphy says when it comes to mental health care, it's already here. Murphy added that businesses have started to move in a direction of supporting their employees' mental well-being, and that should continue, even if it is primarily due to cost-benefit analyses.
And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Now back over to the LJR reporter for CFRC, Christina Laurie, covering a story about KHSC's year-end fundraiser.
University Hospitals Kingston Foundation, which supports both Kingston Health Sciences Center and Providence Care, is currently leading a landmark fundraising campaign, with anonymous local donors matching community donations by up to $100,000. The Double Your Donation Matching Gift Challenge runs until the end of the year, with matched gifts supporting the most pressing needs across both Kingston Health Sciences Center and Providence Care. Jeff Donner, Director of Marketing and Communications with UHKF, shared more about the Matching Gift Challenge with CFRC.
A matching gift challenge is powerful because it turns one person's generosity into something bigger. Every gift goes a little bit further instantly because of that matching element. And this time of year really highlights how deeply people in Kingston care about one another, especially when it comes to healthcare, especially knowing that we're entering into a very important era of healthcare in city and in the city of Kingston and beyond.
As Donner mentioned, local healthcare is at a pivotal moment, with local hospitals facing evolving demands and major projects on the horizon.
I think what's new this year is the intentionality behind the campaign. Mm-hmm. The news is definitely out there that land has been put aside for a new hospital and innovation complex. More news to come on that, obviously. But I think the most important takeaway from that is It reinforces how important investment in healthcare is for our region, particularly as we face a very large capital project that will take many, many years to complete. This is sort of our first foray into that type of landscape.
The funds raised through this challenge will also help hospitals respond to today's realities, including growing patient volumes, increasingly complex care needs, and the need for new technologies. From modern equipment and innovative treatments to staff support and system-wide improvements, the campaign helps turn community generosity into direct impact. Lori Fagiani, Director of Engagement and Sustainability with UHKF, emphasized that this is truly a community-driven effort, with donations staying local and directly supporting care close to home.
One of the nice things with working with the foundation is that the funds that we do raise through all of our campaigns and all of the different ways that we raise funds do stay local. So they are here and they are helping our friends, our families, our neighbors. The money that we raise is going to help, you know, you and your family. So that's a really important issue, that knowing that donor donations stay right here in Kingston to help our own community.
Donors can contribute through one-time or recurring gifts by visiting uhkf.ca/give. Once again, gifts made by December 31st, 2025 will be matched dollar for dollar by anonymous local donors, up to $100,000.
You know, as you know, hospitals don't slow down during the holiday. In many ways, needs increase. Community support during this season sends a powerful message to healthcare teams that they're not alone. And I think that's really the spirit of the campaign that we're trying to share with the public is we're here for you. And we invite your support to be here for one another as well through donation and through your participation in our holiday campaign. Every gift helps strengthen care across our hospitals.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it doesn't matter the size of the gift. It's the support. And this is the season of giving. And so big, small, your donations are all greatly appreciated. Again, they will go to support local health care right here in Kingston, supporting our own family, our friends, our neighbors, the people that we know. And that makes a huge difference.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about Coburg's Trinity United Church.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Coburg, Ontario. Financial struggles have struck a historic church in Coburg. The 200-year-old Trinity United Church is threatened to close its doors as early as next year, but could survive longer if assets are sold while the church is looking for a new minister. Internal leadership is strategizing on how to right this financial ship. Christine Raby, the secretary of the stewardship committee at the church, speaks with me about the financial difficulties.
This church is incredibly important to this community. It's been around now for officially over 200 years. They celebrated their 200th anniversary just last year. And not only the building itself, but the community of the church has been really an important part of Coburg for a long time. And I mean, I know for me, coming to Coburg as a newbie just a couple of years ago, I was so excited for there to be a United Church in this area because I really think it's important for there to be somewhere that anyone of any faith can go and feel at home in that space. So it's the only one we got. It's an important spot.
So I understand that the church is undergoing some financial struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Can you paint us a picture of where the church is at, how it got there, and possibly what the plans are for the future?
Absolutely. So the church underwent a big financial audit just very recently, and the council's been talking through some of those projections and kind of what's going on and how it got there. The church has been running a deficit for a couple of years now. I think COVID was a really tough time for everyone and for churches especially, right? Having to pivot, having to buy new equipment to start running online services, people not coming into the building as much, not donating, etc. So I think that was a difficult situation, and the church has been, you know, working and trying to kind of move against that, but hasn't been able to and has been running a deficit since. So now looking at that, the projections going forward are not so great. As far as the report is looking at, you know, they're saying, you know, if we tap into our resources, the church has a housing fund and some other assets. Maybe we can be looking towards 2027, but without those extra resources, we wouldn't be necessarily financially sustainable that far even. So it's something that's kind of an urgent need that's been built up over a couple of years, and we're just trying to figure out how we can reconcile that and build a journey to a more sustainable future at the church.
So have you noticed possibly that donations could be down due to the affordability crisis? Some people may not have money to give. Are you seeing that in the church right now?
I mean, absolutely. I think we're seeing that in every sector, but I think also that there are some people that don't attend as regularly maybe as they used to. Life is busy. And I think we really want to try and, you know, remind people of the good that church can bring, that church is important even in our really busy, bustling lives right now, and encourage people to come out and enjoy our services and see what church can provide for them so that they feel like it's worth giving of their time, their talents, and if they can, their finances.
So are you noticing that I guess I'm kind of segueing here, but are you noticing that the congregation population has decreased?
I'm coming in on a relatively short term, if I'm being honest, though I do know that there has been some decline. From what I seem to understand, I think that there's still a really healthy number that come out for some of those big services. We're going into Christmas Eve coming up, those kind of Advent and Lent services have still good attendance. There's still people who call Trinity United Church their congregational home, who consider themselves to be members, but maybe don't make it out on a November Sunday morning. So we're hoping that we can kind of really talk to some of those people and also encourage some members of the community who maybe don't have a faith community and don't understand what that could be as a positive for them, that they might want to come and check it out, because Trinity welcomes everyone. You don't have to be a baptized member to come and enjoy a service or even to come enjoy some non-worship activities at the church.
So then has the church undertaken any community engagement to understand why some people come to church and why people don't go to church?
I think that there are a lot of reasons why that happens. I mean, I mentioned just the busyness of life these days. Lifestyle has changed a lot in the last 50 years. And I think the church is trying to do what they can to try and accommodate those changes and try and remain a relevant place for people by offering a little bit of peace in all of that busyness and offering opportunities to enrich the lives of young people as well. I think that there are some stereotypes around that church is for older folks. It's a place for them to have community. But I think we overlook just how big of an impact the church can have on young people as well. And there's some good things going on at Trinity, especially in the music ministry. I'm a music person myself, so I'm a little biased. But as somebody who did grow up in the church, I really see a lot of value in having a place for young people where they can interact with people of all ages, can have kind of a safe space outside of home and school, and kind of build some social skills and also have a place for some spiritual nurture too.
Wonderful. And so then going forward, what's the plan to stabilize the finances and possibly get them into a better position?
I think from what I understand, there's a bit of a multi-prong approach, and the finance committee would maybe be a little bit better equipped to get into the nitty-gritty of it. But I think they're targeting, of course, on one hand, fundraising, continuing to put together fun activities to bring people in. We just had our big Holly Tea and Craft sale. We are doing community movie nights and suppers. Stewardship committee is working on our Taste of Trinity fundraiser, where people can enjoy hosting or attending dinners at people's homes. So we are trying to make things happen in that respect, but also trying to bring people in. We have our Christmas services coming up, which are always a special time at the church. So encouraging anybody who wants to come out and enjoy. We've got a lovely Advent 4 service coming up with the Trinity Concert Band. So we'll have some lovely band music this Sunday. And then, of course, our Christmas Eve services, which are geared towards family at 4 p.m. with the children singing and performing their Christmas pageant. And then, of course, a 9 p.m. candlelight service for a little bit more of a serene feeling of the holidays. So just trying to bring people in to enjoy and take part in things, I think, is a big part of the process.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the week. Thursday, January 1st, the first day of the new year, is going to be cold with the remnants of midweek snow still on the ground, possibly another 2 to 4 centimeters falling on January 1st. Friday, January 2nd, we're out of the run of nasty weather here in the city of Kingston. Daytime high of -7 with partly sunny conditions. Overnight low of -12, feeling closer to -13. Saturday, January 3rd, daytime high of -8. Overnight low of -16 with sunny conditions. Sunday, January 4th, daytime high of -7, low of -11. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, January 5th, daytime high of -4 with a 76% chance of light snowfall in the forecast.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.